Conference record has joined the conference.
Hi. Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Yep, Kevin Jin here.
May I know who's this? Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. Hello. 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 Hello there.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Kevin?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay, this is Jen. Hi.
Hi, hi.
You're the first one, I think.
No, I'll put it on mute.
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay, thanks.
Hello, Jennifer.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, this is Alfie from DBS.
Hi, Alfie. Is Andy with you?
No, he's running some other stuff, so I'm standing in.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, okay.
Jenny?
Yes, Iggs.
Yeah, we can start now, it's 6:30.
We only have two on the line now.
Okay, let's give it another minute. Jen, you want to do a roll call?
Okay. May you know who's on the line now?
Hi, Iggy. This is Beth Coronel from RCBC.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Jen. Hi, Iggy.
Hi, Andy from DBS.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, Andy.
Hi, Brian from Credit Suisse.
May, can you repeat that?
This is Brian from Credit Suisse.
Brian. Hi, Brian. Brian from Credit Suisse. Hi.
William from CIMB.
Hi, William.
Hi, hi.
I know we also have Alfie from DBS, and we also have Kevin from Alpha Capital Online. I think we can start, Iggs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good evening. Yeah. You want to send some, give some reminders first, Jenny,
okay,
before we start?
Yeah, good evening, everybody. And we just like to remind everyone to put your phone on mute if you're not speaking, to just to mute out all the noise in the background, because we had a hard time listening in last time. It was a bit noisy. So we'd appreciate if you can mute your phone. And also this call will be recorded. So for your colleagues or your clients who want to listen in, I'll provide you with a playback option later on. Okay, go ahead, Iggs.
Good evening. With us this evening are Sito Alejandro, the Group Chief Operating Officer of Del Monte Pacific, Nils Lommerin, the President CEO of Del Monte Foods in the U.S., and Dave Myers, the CFO of Del Monte Foods. And this is Iggy Sison, CFO of Del Monte Pacific. Let's start on page 5. Page 4 are just some notes for your reference. On page 5 of the PowerPoint, we're pleased to report that Del Monte Pacific generated sales of $473 million, 6% higher than the first quarter last year, on the back of sales growth in Del Monte Foods in the U.S. by 10% and Del Monte in the Philippines by 7% in the first quarter over last year. This resulted in a group EBITDA of $17 million, which is much higher than basically the break-even level we had in the prior year first quarter. We also narrowed the net loss of Del Monte Pacific to $12 million, versus last year's loss of $22 million. So this is a significant improvement over last year. On page 6, we have the highlights of our consolidated results with sales of $472.8 million. Again, due to DMFI in the U.S. and Del Monte sales in the Philippines, posting robust growth rates. The gross profit you'll see here is much higher at $93.8 million versus last year, $70.7 million, where we had certain non-recurring and acquisition-related expenses, primarily the inventory step-up last year, which we don't have anymore this year. This gross profit generated a margin of about 19.8%. Almost 20%, so that's much higher than the 15.9% gross margin we had in the first quarter last year. So the operating profit now is 0.2, basically break even, much better than the $12 million operating loss last year, resulting in a net loss of $12 million, much better than the $21.9 million loss last year. Our net debt is $1.8 billion. We'll talk more about this in a while to explain the seasonality of the business as well as the leverage. I'll skip page 7 for now. This is Del Monte Pacific parent results. We can come back to this later if you have any questions. I'll move on to page 8. About 79% of our sales in the first quarter were contributed by Del Monte Foods in the U.S. In Asia, while the Philippines grew by 7%, we had some supply constraints, which resulted in a negative 1.6 performance in Asia Pacific. Europe was down as well due to those same pineapple supply constraints.
Thanks, Iggy. This is Nils Lammeren, President and CEO of the Del Monte Foods in the U.S. I want to take you through our priorities for this fiscal year. The first one is to ensure that we maintain the momentum that we have in our base business, both in sales and share. What that does is allow us to invest and partner with our retailers through the critical holiday seasons. That'll be Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter in the U.S., which are three critical holidays that we need to be the brand of choice. We were last year, and we expect to do the same this year. Leverage the acquisition we did with Sager Creek. Sager Creek is an acquisition that is very complementary to the Del Monte Foods business. On the one hand, they have a strong food service segment, and we do not. We've been focused very much on the retail segment. They also have a retail portfolio, but it's a complementary retail portfolio for us. So their business is very complementary, both in terms of channel and in terms of portfolio in the retail. And then we will continue to look for growth in other areas that we haven't focused on in the past, such as ethnic and Asian markets in the U.S.
Okay. In Asia, we will continue to expand the Del Monte brand in the Philippines. You noted the 7% growth in the Philippines in the first quarter. S&W will continue to gain more traction as it leverages its distribution in Asia and the Middle East. And in the first quarter, our S&W branded sales were up by 10%. Our affiliate in India will continue to generate higher sales and sustain the positive EBITDA, as you saw in the last quarter. So this is a good trend in our JV in India. And the El Nino weather pattern, we will address this through a range of mitigating measures in the field, such as continuous enforcement of land preparation and reinforcing the root health of the pineapple crop.
What I'd like to do now is talk a little about the cash flow of the business. As I mentioned, our business is, from a sales standpoint, very much skewed toward the key holidays in the U.S. And at the same time, we also have our costs are actually skewed to the first quarter. For the most part, it's focused on the pack. So as the crops come in, we buy cans, we buy raw products, et cetera. We make large investments to put the pack up, and once that is over, our working capital needs will peak, and then we'll begin to sell off the product without the incremental working capital to do that. So, you know, our sales will peak during those key holidays, and our costs will peak during the pack season, which is essentially June through September of each year. Once we get past September and into October, you'll see our cash flows will increase as we get into the holidays, and at the same time, we're not running our plants because we've already packed for the entire season. And when those cash flows turn positive, that puts us in a position to further deleverage in the second, third, and fourth quarters of the year. In the first quarter, if you include Sager Creek, our sales were up 10% to $373 million. If we just look at DMFI and exclude Sager Creek, our sales were up 2%. The sales were constrained in Q1 due to tight supply. A year ago, when we bought the business, there were some areas and marketing areas we needed to address. One, we had to fix pricing. We also had to fix the packaging and address promotions and rebuild relationship with retailers. We were very successful in doing that. The result of that, however, was toward the end of the year, we became very tight on supply prior to the current year's pack. So the early results this year were affected by that, and the fourth quarter results were also affected by the simple fact that we didn't have as much product as we'd like, because we sold more than we thought we would in the second and third quarters of last year. But the good news is that the business is, returned to health. We've got the right pricing, the right packaging, the right promotions. We've got strong relationships, and, we have a very strong pack this year, which will allow us to build momentum. We want to make sure that we, maintain that momentum and strength, both in terms of market share and in sales, across all of our core retail segments. And that's what we did last year. We were able to grow share in each of our core segments, and I expect we'll be able to grow share again in fiscal 16 across all of our key segments as well. One of the key drivers of our sales in fiscal 16 will be new products. This is an example of a fruit cup that's focused on adult. So this is part of our adult snacking initiative, and it is a combination of fruit and vegetables in a single serve cup. The other thing that's important is that we're really focused on digital marketing, social media, PR to promote our products, and we have a good balance between traditional advertising channels like television and radio, and now complementing that with digital, social, and PR. But here's one example of a product that we've recently rolled out that's done really well and is the beginning of building a very strong snacking business focused on adults as opposed to children.
Yeah, in the Philippines, where we posted the 7% growth in the first quarter, there was very strong demand for packaged mixed fruit and beverage. You'll see some of our campaigns here for Fit and Right in the Philippines, as well as for culinary sauce in the Philippines. And in the next page, we also feature our ketchup in a new resealable pouch for the Philippine market, and our spaghetti sauce. On page 15, our S&W branded business sales in Asia and the Middle East rose by 10%. Basically, this was driven by strong fresh pineapple exports, which offset the soft package segment as a result of the constrained supply. So with this, we expect to return to profitability in FY 2016 and generate more cash flow in the second half of the year. So with that, we'd like to open the floor for questions.
Hello?
Jenny, you have questions there on your end, Jenny? Yes?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I just wanted to ask about the question about some of your acquisition plans going forward, especially with the Del Monte brand in the Philippines. Will the company be interested in acquiring, say, maybe established but struggling beverage brands in the Philippines?
Hi, this is Tito Alejandro, and I also manage the Philippine business. The beverage category is very important to us, no? And we have been successful in this category, pushing our own fruit juices. We do not think we have maximized that yet, so we will stick with our strategy of maximizing our fruit juice business and offering not only in cans but different package formats. For example, one of the successes we've had is offering juices in the Tetra format that has increased in-home consumption of our juices. No? The other part of our juice portfolio is Fit and Right, as you probably saw in the write-up, and we have not also maximized the share in that segment. So for now, we think that there's still a lot of growth opportunities with our current portfolio, and we will continue with that. And if in the future we believe that there is opportunity for acquisition, then we will of course consider that. But we will stay the course this year and for the most part of next year.
And we have a new PET line.
On the Fit and Right product, as you know, for the longest time we were on toll manufacturing arrangement. That did not give us the right margins that we had wanted to further support the marketing of the brand. So by the end of this year, we will open up our own manufacturing facility for Fit and Right. We have our own bottle making and filling operations, no? And that will give us the right margin for this category and allow us to further invest in marketing to grow the business.
Okay, thank you. And one more question is, what about the College Inn growth brand in the U.S.? Any plans to maybe, say, have an aggressive inorganic expansion plan moving forward?
Yeah, I'll address that. The College Inn business in the U.S. is, a very good business for us. It has some of the highest margins in our portfolio. It is the leader in the Northeast in the U.S., and what we're working on growth plans to expand outside of that. One of the big wins we just recently had was with a exceptionally large customer of ours that took College Inn from a regional brand, and they put it nationally across all of their stores. So that was a significant win in terms of distribution for the brand, and we'll continue to look to the larger retailers to expand the brand through all of their stores, as opposed to focusing just on the regional stores that College Inn is the leader in.
Okay, and any new brands in general that, you know, maybe the company is trying to develop through acquisitions or JVs?
Sorry, can you please repeat your question? There was some
noise
in the background.
Okay. What about in general, any new brands that the company is eyeing to develop through acquisitions or joint ventures?
And right now, we feel we've got substantial untapped potential in our core businesses. Sega Creek really was a opportunistic acquisition that filled two gaps for us. One, a product portfolio gap with their focus on mixed vegetables and southern greens, et cetera, and beans, and also a channel opportunity to build in food service. So that was really opportunistic. But outside of that, we feel that the ability to grow our existing fruit, vegetable, and tomato businesses, broth businesses, is exceptionally high, and we're going to put all of our efforts against building those core businesses before looking to future acquisitions.
Okay, thank you.
Hello? Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hello?
Yep.
Yes, we can.
Okay, this is Lika from Manila,
and from Merger Market. And I would just like to ask, I know that the beverage business here in the Philippines is quite tough. It's with big players like Del Monte and then San Miguel, and then can you give me a sense of the market share, or what segments are really tough, and then what are the areas that you can, where you can grow, something like that?
Yeah, well, if you look at the total beverage segment, the non-alcoholic, that's really divided into the soft drinks, the tea, and the juice market, no? As far as the soft drinks market is concerned, we have no interest in that because we don't have the leverage to do that, and we don't know that market. The packaged tea, we also do not have interest in that because C2, as you know, is well entrenched, as well as Nestle. And the profit margins in that category is not very good. Fairly thin, because the prices are very low. Where we are really playing is in the fruit juice segment, which continues to be large and growing. Right now, our fruit juice business is between 5 billion to about close to 7 billion pesos in revenue, and very profitable. We believe that this is the growing segment, specifically among a now more health-conscious set of consumers. No, we're also penetrating schools, no, where soft drinks are becoming be more banned, no, in more places. So we're very happy in competing in the fruit juice segment. We are going to stay with that segment. We know that we can grow that. And our future consumers are there, both the young adults and the older adults who are willing to pay for our product. And it is also an area where, because of our margin, we're able to do a lot of marketing, a lot of advertising. And as you know, beverage is very sensitive to advertising. So that's where we are as far as beverage is concerned.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello. Another one, in the tomato paste, tomato sauce business, there are other competitors who are selling at much lower prices and being bundled with pastas. How is it affecting you, and is going into similar business like going to flour also in your line of in the future?
Actually, the bundling of the tomato paste with with pasta was started by Del Monte, no? Because as you know, we've had a pasta business for the longest time, and we've decided that we will grow both as a combo, and to develop a systems usage between the two products. So you have pasta and you have the sauce. So we started that. And we're very competitive, no? In fact, we've grown our market share because of that combination, no? In the tomato sauce segment, we hold an 80% share of that market, no? And in spaghetti, we hold about 55%. And in the pasta segment alone, just pasta, we're the number two right now. So we are very bullish about that market, no? So we'll continue to do a lot of promotions to push our spaghetti and our tomato sauce. With regards to coming up with our own flour business, we have not really considered that yet. We have very good costing where we source our pasta today. And I don't know, probably if the business continues to grow and we see that we are in a position or we are at a very high scale level of our business, and we'll try to see whether we need to integrate backward into setting up our own flour operations to produce the pasta.
Just the one last question. The fruit business, the canned fruit, the or generally the plantation here in the Philippines is very much affected by the changing climate. Is there any way that to offsetting that, like for example, doing JVs with other plantations as well to have the scale, or with other companies doing the same thing to have more scale?
Well, first is, I think you asked two questions. One is on El Nino, and the second one is whether we need more land, right, to have more higher scale. On El Nino, we are also affected by that. I must say, just like Thailand, which is the other source of pineapple. But we are mitigating that by agricultural practices in strengthening the root system of the pineapple fruit. No, the pineapple fruit is fairly strong. No, but whenever it gets caught at the flowering stage, that's the most dangerous part of the impact of El Nino. No? But so far, yes, we have been affected, and we're looking at about a 5% reduction in our tonnage this year, but we're doing other things to improve that condition. And also we're preparing for next year, no? Because of the better conditions, we're able to plant more hectareage, and that will help us rebound with higher tonnage next fiscal year, no? On scale, right now we have 22,000 hectares of land, 18,000 specifically planted, no? We continue to get land in Bukidnon, although I must say it has become very challenging because everybody wants to get land, no? But for now, we will get as much land as we can. There are still some areas that we think that we can get more land, and we will stay with that strategy, and we don't have any plans of going to other geographies.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Brian, from Credit Suisse here. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Hi. Okay. First question was just a bit of a clarification on the point that there was a lack of product in Q4 and Q1. Was that driven by the harvesting cycle, or was it something else?
Are you referring to Del Monte in the U.S.?
Yeah,
so in Q4 and Q1, our sales were somewhat limited because we didn't have product. And the reason was when we did the pack, the prior pack, we put promotional plans in place. We changed price points. We changed packaging. We expected that to have a positive effect on our business. It actually had a more positive effect on our business than we had expected. Therefore, we sold more, and as we moved into Q4 and Q1, prior to the current pack we're in, we were light on several of our SKUs as a result of that. So essentially, we sold more than we expected in the front end of the year, which caused issues with supply in the back half of the year. Those will be corrected with this year's pack, which will be one of our largest packs ever.
Right. So how do we as a business manage this, given that you need to project 3-4 quarters in advance, and also, on the other hand, manage the possibility of having too much inventory in the future?
Well, you know, it's a challenging business, certainly, because it's very different than a continuous production business. We need to put a forecast together for the full year, and we have 3 months to pack to that forecast, and then we need to manage our business to that forecast. There are some times where we will, under forecast, which is what happened last year, and we had some allocations, some products that we were very low on. In some cases, we may over forecast somewhat, and we'd have some excess inventory, but we would have visibility to that excess inventory certainly going the last 4 months or so of the fiscal year, and we would increase Easter promotions, as an example, or add some other retailer promotions to try to get that inventory balance back prior to the upcoming pack. So in other words, we've got different mechanisms we have to either increase or decrease the rate of sales by either adding or deleting promotions to try to manage our pack to move into the following year pack with about 6 weeks of overlap.
Okay, so could I get a sense for this year what you're budgeting for?
This year's pack is one of the largest packs that we've ever ever put up.
Okay.
And a couple of reasons for that. You know, one, I was going to say two reasons for that. One is we do need to make up for the fact that we're light on several items, as I talked about, the allocations in Q4 and Q1. And the second is the fact that we expect strong sales and our ability to continue to grow share in our core businesses. And we expect to be the brand of choice for all of the key holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter.
Okay. Next question is really on the OPEX side. I understand there were some steps taken post-acquisition to help reduce OPEX, things like outsourcing and so on. Could I get a sense on where are we in terms of progress on this front?
On the operating expense, one major initiative is the outsourcing of the IT and accounting to a global service provider. We announced before that that would save us $19 million a year. So that's in progress, and that's quite significant, and that will be recurring every year. Del Monte Foods also moved the office location. We've also mentioned that earlier, that will save us about $2.5-3 million a year.
We also, post the Sager Creek acquisition, we closed one of their manufacturing facilities and moved that production into one of Del Monte's existing facilities. So that also was a material reduction in our fixed cost.
Okay. Last question is really on the debt side. Can you just remind me on where we are right now in terms of hedging all our debt outstanding? And how much is fixed, is still floating?
You want to talk about the U.S. debt?
Yeah, we've both our Term Loan 1 and our Term Loan 2. We did it on a rolling basis. It will start to take effect beginning in F17. We didn't hedge 15 and 16, which is good.
Okay.
Okay, on the DMPL bridge loan financing, we have $480 million. $350 million of that was extended for a period of 2 years up to February 2017, and that will be refinanced with a future perpetual security offering. $130 million of that, we just refinanced the other week with a 5-year fixed rate loan. So that's fixed for the next 5 years with the bullet repayment after 5 years. We've also refinanced some of our short-term facilities in the Philippines into fixed rates. So we have been active in fixing the rates of our facilities, including the bridge financing. So we have $480 million of that today, excluding our working capital facilities.
Okay. So as far as the preference share goes, given the current market conditions where spreads have widened significantly, does it still make sense to go to the preference share? And if not, do you see us being able to perhaps go on without doing the preference share?
We have up to February 2017 to time that, so we have, you know, a year and a half. If need be, we can extend that facility beyond February 2017. So we will certainly do that at the right time, at the right price, if we wanted to. There's no rush for us to do that today, especially given this market, as you pointed out.
Right, but you don't see any need to do it for the sake of bringing down gearing? And do you think the gearing is manageable as is?
Of course, you know, it's there's a trade-off, you know, between managing the balance sheet and managing, you know, the P&L. We'll just do it when we think the time is right and the market is right. The perpetual security offering, for some people, you'll get 50% equity treatment. Others may give you 100% equity treatment. It really varies from one investor to another, whether you're fixed income or you're an equity investor. So we will consider all of those as we choose the right time and to do the preference share offering.
All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to highlight that we don't have any compelling financial covenant that, you know, that makes us do it today if we had to. So we have time to do that at the right pricing at the right time, as long as we comply with our financial covenants and we are compliant today.
If I just ask one more question, as far as gearing goes, taking a view maybe 5 years down the road, where do you want to see gearing go? What's the long-term target?
Yeah, again, going back to the $350 million perpetual security offering, if we did that, our gearing would go down to about a little over 2x equity. So that will certainly be a big improvement from where we are today. So we'll be around that level of gearing at around 2x equity.
Right. And
of course, that
special.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, with a strong cash flow. Sorry.
No. I just wanted to know beyond the impact of the perpetual. Beyond that, say.
Yeah. Beyond that. Yeah. Beyond that, of course, you have the strong cash flow generation of the group, you know, principally in the U.S. where we have 80% of the business. Definitely with strong free cash flow generation, we should be able to deliver further. A while ago when I said 2x, I was just referring to the perpetual security offering. So beyond that, you know, we should be able to bring that down further.
That combined with higher profitability, higher EBITDA.
Yes, that's right.
Understood. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Hi, this is Andy. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, Andy.
Right.
Yeah.
Hi. Sorry, I haven't had a chance. I'm on the road, so I haven't really had a chance to look at the numbers. But just glancing through, I noticed that operating expense has been, in terms of as percentage of sales, actually has gone up. And also, so I just want to get a sense, would this sustain? Because I actually didn't really catch the front part. So would it sustain in the following quarters? And I think second part of the question would be in terms of looking forward. I think previously we were looking at about 180 million EBITDA. So in light of first quarter numbers, do you think that is still sustainable or achievable? Sorry.
Yeah, you want to address the EBITDA first.
I didn't know it's the EBITDA in the first quarter versus the whole year. Is that
So I'll talk about DMFI. You know, we have the first quarter, we've got a business plan which we have confidence in that will achieve the levels we've communicated prior, which is $180 million of EBITDA. So at this point, and taking the first quarter into account, we still believe that $180 million of EBITDA in the U.S. is achievable.
And the first quarter seasonally is always our lowest EBITDA quarter historically. It's always been that way because, as Neil said, we pack all of our product in the first quarter. We don't run any promotions in the first quarter, so that's always typically low.
Right. Okay.
Right. Our first promotion's in August, which is the beginning of the second quarter. That would be back to school.
Right. And how is that coming along? I mean, do you have any indication now that it's September?
Well, as I said before, you know, we know what Q1 is, and we still have confidence in the projections we've previously given, which is to end the full year at $180 million of EBITDA.
Right. Okay.
The first quarter's results have not changed our full year point of view.
Okay. With respect to G&A,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, when you talk about the percent of net sales and the operating expense, you have to consider the seasonality that we just talked about. Of course, when you have the first quarter, which is the lowest quarter for the year, once you start looking at percent of net sales, you should really look at it on a full year basis.
Sure.
First quarter, of course, you will see a higher percentage of operating expense because it's only 18 to 20% of the full year. Yeah.
Because I was comparing year on year, I think in the financial statements in terms of percentage of sales, I think distribution and selling expense was about 7%. Last year was about 6+. So this is quoted in percentage of sales first quarter last year versus first quarter this year. So I just wanted to understand, because last year was also a slower, a seasonally slower quarter. So just want to understand in terms of the uptick, as percentage of these sales this year versus last year, you know, where are we seeing that? You know, are you spending way ahead? And we would see that the second and third quarter, the percentage of sales would be significantly lower year on year. On a year-on-year basis,
in the U.S., our SG&A will go down as we progress through the year, for two reasons. Number one, because of the seasonality of the business, but more importantly, or equally importantly, we made the Sager Creek acquisition, and we are in the midst of combining that with Del Monte, and so they had a higher SG&A run rate than we, and so the consolidation of that over the next couple quarters. Will bring our SG&A percent of NSV down.
For the full year
but,
the group, the operating expense should be lower as a percent of sales versus last year.
What about first quarter this year versus first quarter last year? What is inside first quarter this year that is that bumps up the SG&A as a percentage of sales versus last? First quarter last year?
Well, I just speaking about the U.S. business, the percent would be higher driven by the fact that we did own the Sager Creek business and have not had an opportunity to address their cost structure and consolidate with the core business's cost structure. And I mentioned the fact that our sales were hurt by some allocations on some of our items. So when you combine the impact on sales and the Sager Creek's higher G&A, you're going to get a higher percentage in Q1. But
right.
that will disappear as the allocations disappear and we consolidate Sager Creek.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, Lee Kagan from Manila. I would just like to clarify when you say you are number two in the pasta business in the pasta segment. You're doing toll manufacturing, or you have your own manufacturing plant?
No, we do toll manufacturing. We get our pasta from Dubai, from a company in Dubai.
Okay.
And then we also get some from Indonesia.
Is it because of the lower price? Lower prices there?
Well, I think the only option if you
The only two options, either you put up your own plant here in the Philippines, which, you know, we have not gotten to that decision, or you outsource it, no, and get it from the, from outside, from abroad, no. And it tends to be cheaper because the suppliers are, for example, in Indonesia, they have their own flour mill also, so they're very competitive, no. And likewise in Dubai. Because here, the number one brand is really RFM's brand.
Yes, RFM.
No?
Yes.
Yeah, they're the number one brand, and they have been in the flour business for the longest time, so I think they have a right to be the market leader. But we offer our pasta caters to a higher quality level. We're not low priced. No, we're medium to high priced. And the quality of our pasta is superior to what is offered by the low-priced players in the market.
So there's no plan to expand to other flour-related business like the noodles, the instant noodles, that can also give you more leverage in terms of, like, you already have a presence in pasta.
Yeah, for now, we don't have any plans on those businesses.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead, please.
Yep, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, my question is on the packaged fruit. From US. Actually, you have done pretty well in terms of your gross profit, and even so your margins. But just want to understand what's driving the operating losses in the US packaged fruit site, and is there anything that we should take note, or there are any one-offs that will go away going forward?
The impact in last year in all of our fruit and vegetable business was quite frankly the one-off adjustments that we had in terms of the inventory step up, which is gone away completely for F16. We did see some cost increases in our fruit business. We have taken some pricing and we've adjusted our promotional cycles. But fruit is in the demand for our fruit business exceeds our supply, so we see our fruit business continuing on a very healthy path.
Okay, but you just noticed your OPEX items, they have probably gone up, which resulted in operating losses. So could you like provide more color on those?
Selling and marketing.
Selling and marketing.
Yeah, part of that is the distribution expense due to the products on allocation across customers, right? Which should go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we have product on allocation, our delivery expenses will increase because we will we'll shift from lower cost mode of transportation to some higher cost mode of transportation, so we'll go from rail to truck because we need to move that product quicker because of, we're short on supply and want to keep that customer in stock. So in a year like this, you will see higher selling and distribution costs, certainly on a per unit basis.
Yeah, that's the one driving the first quarter. Also, going back to Andy's question earlier, yeah, it's the selling and marketing or distribution expense.
Okay, so it is also partly due to allocation and trying to push out your products faster, right?
Yeah, we're in allocation. We need to leverage. Higher costs, faster, modes of transportation to customers to ensure that we can keep them in stock.
And that'll also impact us when we do get back in production. In order to get our customers restocked quicker, we'll continue to go with truck versus rail. That'll even out as we get into the pack, and we'll have more than ample inventory. But in the first quarter, you saw not only the allocation issue, but as our production ramps up, we get those products to our customer in a faster mode.
And the difference between truck and rail could be several weeks.
Okay, so just to understand, this is a situational, correct? Or is this permanent thing that we are seeing?
No, this is actually a situation that's already been corrected. We built a pack plan this year that builds the appropriate safety stock, ensures all of our customers get it back in stock, and is ample to cover our base and promotional sales for the fiscal year. So just based on the pack that we've done, and as I said, it's one of the largest packs ever, we've corrected the problem.
Just year to date, our pack is up approximately $100 million versus this time last year. So as Neil said, we've compensated for the out of stocks and product on allocation we had last year.
Sorry, my connection wasn't clear, but just to clarify, which is faster, rail or truck, I think?
Rail is about 2 to 3 weeks slower than truck. So if you want to get it to faster, you use truck, it's our cost.
Okay, that's clear. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any more questions?
Hi. When you mentioned the $19 million savings, when will we first be able to see the, these numbers being reflected in your earnings? Thanks.
That's the savings versus the TSA. That's a full year target savings. Nineteen. Yeah. That's a full year target savings for the financial year ending April next year.
Yeah, you'll see them every month through February, and then the TSA will pay in February.
And the nature of these savings, I presume, is headcount.
We had double charges. Big Heart was charging us a transition services agreement that was very expensive. At the same time, we were building an infrastructure so that when that service agreement was completed, we would be able to do the accounting and finance and accounting services that they were providing for us. So there was really kind of like a double count last year. On February, when we transitioned to our own systems and outsourced it, those expenses from Big Heart went away. So we'll see that every month as we go through the year up until we timed that we eliminated the TSA.
Okay, sure. Just one last question.
Just as another point, obviously that $19 million is how one of the ways we're going from $104 million of EBITDA last year to $180 million of EBITDA that we projected for this year. So there's a number of contributing factors that are going to get us there, but that obviously is one big one.
Okay, sure. Thanks. So I'm just looking at your working capital versus your cash level. I'm just wondering, do you need to to rely on certain, do you need to rely on certain like untapped credit facilities? I mean, you've got like almost like 600-700 million of working capital needs. So I'm just wondering, is there sufficient like credit facilities that's untapped available for you, or you don't really need this?
Yeah, as you see, our revolver or working cap, we use our revolver for working capital, and historically, this is always what we've done. Normally, our revolver will start out at around zero at the beginning of the year, and it'll max out somewhere in September and October. We have a $442 million working capital available to us, and we will get close to $400 million this year in terms of the use of that. And then what happens, and that'll peak in September and October, and then what happens between November and April is, as Neil said, our pack is completed, so we have no more production, and we will sell those products and bring our working capital back down to ideally zero and actually generate cash, which we use then to pay off our Term 1 and Term 2 loan as we get into the year, get into the years ahead.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. Thank you.
Okay, we have time for one more question. Otherwise, we'll... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. I'd just like to find out, with the strengthening of the U.S. dollar, did you see any margin expansion, and how much?
Well, in the Philippines, as you know, Sunny, peso is the functional and reporting currency of our Philippine subsidiary. So in the past few months, net-net, the weak peso versus the U.S. dollar is better for our Asia business, our Philippine business. Given our sales mix and our cost mix, the weak peso is better for us on a net basis. Second is, in the past few months, and that's looking at translation gain. Second is, we've actually been tapering down our dollar borrowings in favor of more peso borrowings. We've been doing that in the past several months because of talks about Greece and other global developments, even before China happened. So given our borrowing mix, the weak peso has also been favorable for us. In the first quarter, for example, we posted a 1.1 million foreign exchange gain. But of course, we have to monitor the exchange rates carefully and stay on top of it. So net-net, it's beneficial to us on a transactional basis as well as on a borrowing basis.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so yeah, we'd like to thank you for the time you spent with us this evening. And if you have any follow-up questions, please get in touch with our colleague, Jenny Louie, and myself. And we'll be happy to follow up with you after this call. Okay? Thank you, everyone.